And stay tuned. You are on the right station, 96.3 FM, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Valentine's Day edition coming at you.
I said downtown when you're brown on a Friday night plays Russian roulette with you, but not with a secondhand Saturday night special. Nah, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of the pressing are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown!
And welcome past the skipping CD of Greedo Serpentino's Downtown to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're also downtown, and sometimes we actually set up a table downtown and try to make sure that there's some justice downtown. That's, of course, recent activity around New Leaf Market, Alibaba's Cafe, and Sushi Now. We've been concerned with boycotting those businesses until such time as they agree to mediate and deal with the real code of conduct and the real concerns of the community around their collusion with New Leaf Market the Redevelopment Agency, City Council, Downtown Association, in essentially sweeping away a whole group of people there and privatizing the sidewalk. Anyway, Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides. It's the Valentine's Day show, and you're invited to be a part of this either by listening or by calling in, or heck, by turning off the radio if you are just so offended or so bored. Hey, that's what you should do. The call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. If you're out of the area, and we should be having some guest callers from out of the area tonight, the area code is 831. Again, the full number, 831-427-3772. And you are tuned, of course, to 96.3 FM, or if you're on the internet, www.microradio.net/FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So what we've got planned in the studio with me is my first guest, John Teelking, who's an activist with the movement to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and provide, I guess, justice for all political prisoners. John, belly up to the mic. You have to be about an inch away from it, and you have to speak in a fairly loud tone of voice. Good evening.
Yeah, hello.
That's it. That's good. And John, I know that you, well, we first actually were on the same sort of side of the fence, politically speaking, when you and I were both harassed at the farmers market for, well, you were, I guess, harassed for tabling with the same kind of, with the organization you were with, and I was harassed for a petition. You remember that back in August, September?
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was, of course, Janet Blazer.
Janet Blazer.
It was Janet Blazer. She was the manager of the farmers market back then. There's luckily been a change in management and a change in policy. They're not going after drummers, petitioners, street performers, and street jewelers so much anymore, though I think they still have the mesh up there that's sort of keeps some of the areas closed that were open.
They still have a mesh up there, although they apparently there's enough room now for people to actually sit there. There are a few vendors actually sitting there. Right next to the mesh.
Uh-huh. And these are people who don't necessarily, they're not farmers market licensees, but the same kind of folks that customarily hung out on the sidewalk with their jewelry and with their political literature and so forth?
Right.
Well, that's a good sign. I haven't been to the farmers market in several weeks, and I haven't really noticed what's been cooking there. Usually I kind of go through the farmers market en route to, as I've mentioned before, my kind of current cause celebre, which is essentially alerting the community to this business downtown where they're building this wrought iron fence around the New Leaf planter, or hippie planter as some call it. I call it New Leaf not because New Leaf owns it, it's supposed to be public sidewalk, but because it's in front of New Leaf Market down on Pacific Avenue, where there's a bunch of youth hanging out there, have been for a long time. It's kind of been a hangout area since Cathcart and Pacific Hippie Corner, as it used to be the case back in 95, 96, Food Not Bombs served there and so forth, moved down to Hippie Planter. And now, of course, the Redevelopment Agency and the City Council and the Downtown Association are trying to eliminate that area. In fact, they've already done so in terms of the plan on the boards. They are just waiting to implement it, or moving to implement it probably within the next week, by building a fence. Anyway, John, we're going to talk to you about an incident that happened to you yesterday at the farmers market involving some thuggery. I want to point out also for those who are tuning in that at 6:30 or thereabouts, we should be getting a call from Andrea Tischler, who owns and manages the Compassion Flower Inn here in Santa Cruz. We're going to be talking about the attacks on medical marijuana providers and patients that has recently reached a new high in San Francisco 2 days ago with the closing of numerous clubs and the arrest of numerous people. And we also hope to get a call from Scott Immler of Los Angeles, whose club was also attacked by the DEA, I think, about 2 months ago. Then we're going to also hopefully be having a call in from Jenny Jett, of Isla Vista, an encampment in Isla Vista, similar to Camp Paradise and Dignity Village up in Portland, Oregon, run by homeless people in a situation where they are managing their own campground and struggling to survive in the face of hostility from authorities. And we're going to be hearing what's happening down there. Isla Vista is a community north of Santa Barbara, a university community, another one of those UC areas. And we may also have a report from Jerry Henry and the final decision of the appeals court, which I just left 20 minutes ago, where Jerry Henry is another individual victimized by deputy sheriffs, district attorneys, and merchants all colluding together, as they're doing downtown, to remove activists who are raising the public awareness that the public sidewalks belong to everyone, that young people have certain rights, that the town does not belong to the person with the biggest wallet or the biggest collection of wallets, in this case this being the Downtown Association in terms of their economic power. And it's not primarily a market, it is primarily a public area, which also includes, as it should, businesses. And all this is on our two-hour show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which we're in the middle of, and you can call in at any time, 427-3772. And interspersed through all this, we're going to, of course, be doing updates on City Council, the upcoming camping ban, sleeping ban stuff that's coming up at the next City Council meeting, and lots more. So let's jump right into the situation with John Teelking here. Hey, John, how you doing?
Okay.
And, John, you... You came back and kind of reported yesterday a rather disturbing incident that happened to you at the farmer's market, I guess, what, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, 4:30 or 5.
What was that incident?
Basically, I was there handing out the petitions for, or handing out the flyers advertising our upcoming rally for the February 23rd march and protest for Mumia Abu-Jamal, Leonard Peltier, and all political prisoners.
At which, by the way, I guess I and others will be speaking around local issues around the sleeping ban.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at 11:30 a.m. on February 23rd, running until about 2:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it would run until 2:30 a.m.
Hey, who knows? Set up a tent city and do it there. You never can tell.
Right. Basically, what happened was this guy, a man... tall white man with black knit cap and glasses and a black sweatshirt came up to me at the farmer's market. He started accusing me of thinking that the fact that Mumia was a cop killer, or the idea that Mumia was a cop killer, was some kind of joke or that it was funny. He claimed that I thought that. And I told him no, I didn't think it was funny. But I also pointed out that, you know, it was kind of funny that Arnold Beverly came forward and confessed, and he shot back, well, I don't believe that. You know, that is kind of stupid. I don't believe that, he said.
And what you're referring to is the fact that Mumia Abu-Jamal has been held in jail for almost 20 years now. Recently, new evidence has arisen that another man did the shooting that he is accused of and is on death row for.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That
Arnold
man is
Beverly.
Arnold Beverly.
Who confessed to that in a video recently.
Anyway, after approaching me, he asked me to get out of his face, and I thought that was kind of unusual, so I just said, this is a public sidewalk, and I will continue to stand here.
And you were distributing literature?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right after that, he knocked the flyers out of my hand, and then soon after that, he started to walk away. And then when I went to pick up the flyers, he came back and kicked at them again. And I yelled after him, get out of my face, you know, as he left.
And was there a crowd of people around while this was happening? Or?
Well, there was a few people who stopped by to help me pick up the flyers after he left the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
A little while after that, there was this guy who was a lot taller than I was, maybe about the size of Robert here, standing next to me.
A big, handsome man, in other words.
Right, the guy. Mm-hmm. The guy with the black cap came back and tried to approach me, and the other guy intervened and sort of butted his stomach up against the other guy and sort of said, I love you, man, back off.
Your defender, in essence.
Yeah.
Right?
And so the guy with the black cap got kind of flustered and left.
And you continued then to distribute flyers?
Yeah, I continued to distribute flyers.
To the applause of the crowd, perhaps?
Well, there was an increased level of interest, and by... even some of the vendors, because of what they had seen happen there.
Did you pay this guy to come and assault you to get some interest?
No.
Was this a staged incident, like the incident down at Hippie Planter, where I staged the arrest to have myself handcuffed and taken away by Sergeant Baker? Was that?
I was kind of hoping to get actually find out the guy's name so that I could publicize it on more mainstream media. But
the
I haven't.
The man who assaulted you threw your flyers.
But
down.
I haven't been able to yet find out his name because there is, as of yet, no police report on file.
Well, give us again. Take this from.
But I need to continue with the story so I can figure out where the police report would fit in.
Yeah, and if anybody, by the way, saw this incident, which happened yesterday around 5 o'clock at the farmer's market, I'd love to have you call in here at 427-3772 and tell us what you saw. And or if you're a little embarrassed about that, give a call off air to 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, which is 4833.
Yeah, and I guess the police that I did talk to were expressed a little bit of interest in the guy who was biting his stomach up against the other guy. He said, do you remember who that was? And I couldn't remember.
So they wanted to get the guy who was defending you, maybe put him in jail for improperly defending an individual who should have been, should we say, destroyed or, should we say, tossed aside? Or
well, he'd be an important witness, I would think.
Although, actually, the police were looking to do their job then. But anyway, you hadn't called the police by this point. And let me see where we are in the story. This man has approached you twice and knocked the flyers out of your hand, kicked them.
Right.
Abused you verbally. Was he threatening in any way as he did this verbal abuse?
Well, he wasn't threatening to do anything to me, at least not at that point, and I should continue with the story so you get the full picture.
Go for it. And then this individual defended you the second time by kind of stomach-butting the guy away from you.
Right.
And then what happened?
Well, then the guy got flustered and left, and then Nash, the assistant manager of the farmer's market, came up to me and said, if this guy comes back anywhere on the premises of the farmer's market, that he would call the police and have him hauled off. And eventually he did come back a third time. And this time the situation got a little bit hairier. At first I didn't believe that people were really telling me a straight story. People kept coming up to me and saying, the guy claims he has an axe. And I thought, oh, you mean he has an axe at home or something?
Or an axe to grind, perhaps?
Yeah. And I didn't realize that he actually had it with him. And, so I wasn't scared at that point.
This is the character in the cap who returned, and you heard tales from other people that he had some kind of a farm tool with him? Or
yeah, they described it as an axe.
Uh-huh.
They described him saying that he claimed he had an axe.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't clear to me at that point that he actually had it on him, so I wasn't prepared to run away or anything. But basically what happened was, he glared at me a couple of times, looked like he was running around to different stalls talking to people about me or something.
How far away was he from?
About 50 feet or so.
So you
halfway down the mall, but I couldn't see anything in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Then he left, and then suddenly Nash came along and said,
the assistant manager.
The assistant manager came along and said, hey, I confiscated this thing off of this guy. It turned out to be some kind of farm tool, basically not quite a hoe, but it was half the length of a hoe and kind of looked like a hoe's head with a spike on it or something, just some kind of
heavy, could be used as a weapon, however.
Some kind of heavy-duty farm tool, basically.
And given the man's hostility, it was something you might be afraid was going to be used as a weapon, right?
Right. I mean, after that point, I realized, I should probably take some precautions tonight and make sure that I don't run around all by myself. And like I was planning to go over to the Free Radio Benefit and bring my table over there, and then I realized, maybe it's not such a bright idea to run around all by myself in the dark with my table.
You might meet some of those angry farmers who don't like Mumia Abu-Jamal petitioners, or nuts-wielding weapons. So did you contact the police or any security?
Well, what happened was
the police rushed up to help you, right?
About that time, Nash got somebody with a cell phone, and they called the police, a non-emergency line. And
well, it's not an emergency when a Mumia person gets physically attacked, has flyers scattered all over twice, and then gets approached with a weapon. I mean, that's not really an emergency. An emergency is when somebody is blocking the sidewalk with a table or possibly petitioning against the farmer's market. Now, those are emergency situations. Go ahead.
Right.
Sarcastic here, folks.
Anyway, so Officer Brandt is kind of the English-speaking guy, kind of an older gentleman. Eventually arrived at the farmer's market and examined the farm tool and talked to a few people about what went on, and I asked them specifically, you know, is there any chance that I should be pressing charges against this guy? And he gave me some kind of a noncommittal answer, like, well, you know, you'd have to go to court or something, and you're not really interested, are you, or something like this.
Did you ask him about the advisability of pressing charges, or did you ask him if you could press a charge and would he take a charge?
I didn't ask him specifically about that. I really should have, I suppose. But
uh-huh, right.
And I am, unfortunately, he's not going to be back to work until Sunday, so can't really talk to him right at the moment.
But
I tried to talk to him today, but he wasn't in. Apparently he works 4 days a week.
You can file a charge with any police officer. It doesn't have to be Officer Brandt, who, by the way, is the tall fellow with the English accent, balding head, often on the mall with Sergeant Baker. He used to walk around with a German Shepherd in order to keep the dissidents in line up and down the mall before they thankfully removed the dog from the mall, or the police officer, as Officer Brandt had it. But Officer Brandt, did you feel he was discouraging you for making a complaint? How did you feel?
Well, I didn't feel he was making any real effort to advise me of my rights in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, anyway.
And when you called the police station today, and did you say you wanted to file a complaint?
Yeah, I called them and said I wanted to file a complaint. A police officer called me back and said, well, I'm not, even though Brandt said that let me go on and finish what happened.
So go ahead.
Basically, what happened after Brandt arrived is he told me that, yes, we saw the guy with the black cab walking across the street on the Pacific Garden Mall, and we stopped him and arrested him.
For jaywalking?
Well, I'm not sure for what, but...
Okay, I thought I heard that at some point. Okay, go ahead.
But, I mean, he was jaywalking, but...
Right.
They arrested him, presumably because of the report of what happened at the farmer's market.
Right.
And
assault, right?
Well, I don't know. That's a gray area, too, is what do you call it, assault? Because, I mean, I felt threatened after I realized that he really was carrying a farm tool, but at the point where he was actually carrying it, I wasn't feeling threatened, so...
Well, it seemed to me that if he smashes stuff out of your hand twice, that goes to an assault, even if he didn't touch your person. I mean, but that's just an amateur's view here.
Okay, well, anyway, so Brandt advised me that he had been arrested, and I wasn't clear about how long he was going to be in jail for. I mean, it could be like Robert's case where, you know, he's out in an hour for, you know, an infraction or something, so I figured, well, that has no value at all for me for tonight, you know, for safety purposes.
So it intimidated you from taking the table to the free radio benefit then?
Right, yeah. Basically.
Well, then you attempted to file a complaint today, as I understand it, and you were told by the police that you should wait till Sunday, till Officer Brandt comes in, and possibly you've been able to have a few more encounters with the man with the hoe.
Yeah, really. I mean,
right.
It seems kind of ridiculous that,
right,
you know, you have this potential axe murderer running around, and they don't even have a preliminary report within 12 hours after the incident available for the police to look at.
You tried to find out if there actually had been an arrest of an individual, and you found no record of an arrest?
No record of an arrest involving Officer Brandt. And they didn't have any other officers, you know. They could have filed it under some other officer, but Officer Brandt wasn't on that report or something, so they didn't find it or it was never made or something.
Right, well, I hope we can follow up on this tomorrow, and then when the police department is open again, and get some more information, or possibly we can even talk to a sergeant tonight to see if there was an arrest made. I find this sort of hauntingly reminiscent of what happened to me, not when I was arrested for blocking the sidewalk with a table, which was a completely concocted charge by Sergeant Baker and Matisse Selman of Sushi Now, but rather 2 days later when I was attacked by a man named Jackal, Thomas Lang actually is his name, according to the court records, who smashed the table, shouted death threats, he also kicked flyers on the ground, and then attacked the man who intervened between myself and Mr. Lang to make peace. And the result of all this was, within a day, Mr. Lang had been discharged. He was charged with essentially, I think he got nine days jail for an assault. There was no stay away order. No, the victim, myself, and the man who was actually hit in the face, a fellow named, I think, Jeff Zigner, was never were never contacted to come to court or to hear about what was going on. Calls to the district attorney's office, two of them from me, were ignored. When I went in person a third day and was encountering flack from Hope, the secretary at the DA's office, from, you know, I was trying to find out the name of the supervisor of the district attorney. They called out three DAs with guns and badges to, in essence, tell me to leave. Not quite. They were just saying, we're going to stand here and make sure you don't harass this woman, in essence. And I was saying, I'm just trying to find out the name, her name and her superior's name, because I'm getting treated badly and I want to file a complaint. I couldn't get that information. Finally got her name, but I couldn't get her superior's name. But let's finish up with your case, because I know you have to leave in a few moments.
One thing I'd like to add is that the only concrete thing that came out of this actually is that the man who harassed me has been banned from the farmer's market.
According to Officer Brandt.
According to Officer Brandt.
Who also told you that you couldn't file a complaint, or wouldn't be a good idea for you to file a complaint, and then informed you there had been an arrest, which apparently there's, so far as we know, as of yet, no record of. So I'm not saying Officer Brandt is in error on all these points, so he may well be quite accurate, but I'm concerned about the confusion and the lack of security about activists in general. Any announcements you want to make? Are you looking to see if this man has been released, or if there were any witnesses? I take it some of the people saw at the booths nearby this man knocking the flyers out of your hand and heard them threatening you with this hoe or whatever he had in his hand.
Right. I guess
back.
I get my home phone number out, so if anyone wants to call in as a witness or whatever, they can call 475-2757.
Or you can call the Huff line at 423-4833 in case you need to leave a message and you can't get an actual person there, because I know you're not always there, John. We've been talking with John Teelking, who is a faithful tabler downtown for various political causes, including you've also been notoriously sympathetic about the sleeping ban, and I guess there's a forum coming up on that pretty soon.
Right. We want to announce that.
Go ahead.
There's on Tuesday, February 19th, there will be a community awareness forum at the Vets Hall, room 22. That'll be on the sleeping ban and rent control. It'll be Robert Norris, Michael Schmidt, Becky Johnson, Larry Templeton, and Donna Dice will be speaking. And then the following week, there will be, on February 26th, there will be a free Mumia Leonard Peel Tyrannol political prisoners meeting with Jeff Mackler, Evelyn Schoenfeld, Don Dolan, Carlos Padilla, and Gregory Uba.
There's also some sort of rally on a Saturday at the town clock around Mumia political prisoners coming up in about a week.
Yeah, 11:30 a.m. on the 23rd.
And that'll also be, I'll be speaking on the sleeping ban, too. Apparently it's a popular law, that sleeping ban, or perhaps an unpopular law, that might be better put. And how can people get more information, John, about all this stuff in case they've not been taking notes as they go?
Well, there's the Mumia voicemail number, which is 425-4467. That has our announcements of upcoming events. And also, you can look on the World Wide Web at http://www.mumia.org.
Dig it.
And also, refuseandresist.org has a good batch of Mumia stuff on there, including the Arnold Beverly confession and Mumia's testimony as to what happened the night of December 9th, 1981. And also, his brother William Cook has come out with his statement about what happened that night. So all these FOP guys who are saying that, well, Mumia and Mumia's brother haven't said anything for 20 years, well, now they have said something.
Should be noted that Mumia Abu-Jamal does broadcast reports from jail, which are played on the station. And also, he was a journalist and an activist involved with MOVE, the collective in Philadelphia that was burned out by the Philadelphia police. And there's quite a scandal around the whole thing. And also, I'm concerned that individuals who are publicizing the rights and news about poor people end up railroaded onto death row, at least certainly without a fair trial. We've been talking with John Teelking. John, is there anything more you want to say?
Just one more announcement. There's going to be a week of protest at Vandenberg Air Force Base, May 13th to 19th, 2002. It's basically to stop global terror and the slaughter of civilians, and basically it's a protest against the Space Command and the, anti-ballistic missile system that Bush is trying to put together, the National Missile Defense, or whatever they call it. Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The contact number for that is 831-457-9914.
457-9914.
Yeah.
For the Vandenberg action in May.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there should be a single day of protest at the front gate. I'm not sure when that will be.
We can perhaps discuss that as the date gets closer.
Yeah.
John, you're going to be back at the farmer's market, I presume, next week. Hopefully. You will have maybe some hose for a hoedown, or maybe you won't need a hose. Maybe bring your farmer's outfit, and you can make friends with a guy and go do some, irrigating or something.
I also need to bring my voter registration cards, because that ups the stakes for anyone harassing you. They can be charged or fined under federal law if they harass you for trying to register people to vote.
Well, we'll see if the Butchie Baker gets fined under federal law for running after, taking away my rights to run a table downtown, supposedly for blocking the sidewalk on the instructions or advice or complaint of Matisse Selman.
Okay, I have to get going.
Hey, thank you, John, for being here. And folks, if anybody's interested, you want to call in and discuss this issue, John won't be here, but I'm going to be here. I can field some calls. We should be getting a call shortly, however, from Andrea Tisler, who is, as I said, Compassion Flower Inn owner, who is a little bit concerned about what's going on up in San Francisco. I'm going to read a story about that in a moment. And also locally about the positions of Sheriff Mark Tracy and Supervisor Marty Wormhout, who apparently are refusing to accept the kinds of more liberal limits on marijuana plants per person. I think it's not numbers, but there's a different standard used, which essentially stop the police from arbitrarily and sort of capriciously making decisions about the amount of marijuana that a patient can have. And apparently these new standards have been successful up in Sonoma, and I don't know if I have that article with me, unfortunately, but if Andrea calls in, then we'll be able to ask her what the story is on that. I'm going to read now the story about San Francisco Medicinal Marijuana Club raided plant C3 Hell. This is from the Mercury News by Dan Reed. Federal drug agents on Tuesday raided a medicinal marijuana club in San Francisco and served seven other search warrants, arresting three people and confiscating 8,300 pot plants, a crackdown that drew a sharp denunciation from advocates of using the weed as medicine. The raids coincided with a speech delivered the same day at the Commonwealth Club in the city by Aza Hutchinson, administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the announcement in Washington of President Bush's new drug strategy. To some, that smacked of a poor-taste publicity stunt. It seems that the government is playing fast and loose with the health of thousands of people, all for publicity purposes, so they can have a big splash when Aza Hutchinson comes to San Francisco, said William Panzer, attorney for arrested pot suspect Ed Rosenthal of Oakland. The raids began early Tuesday morning. Arrested were James Halloran of Oakland, Richard Watts of San Francisco, the suspected manager of the marijuana club, and Rosenthal, a minor celebrity, is the author of several books on marijuana. He also used to write a column called Ask Ed for High Times magazine, the counterculture digest of pot aficionados. Also arrested was Kenneth Hayes in Canada on suspicion of drug offenses there. A warrant on U.S. charges awaits him. I expect he'll be seeking political refugee status in Canada, Panzer said. Using marijuana for medicinal use is legal in seven states, including California, but remains illegal under superseding federal law.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert.
Yes.
This is Andrea at the Compassion Flower Inn.
Oh, excellent. I don't know if you've been listening to our show, Andrea. We're just reading the Mercury News' article now about federal agents raiding a club, arresting three, and so forth. Have you been listening to us?
Well, I didn't even know about that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I actually asked you to be on the air. I mean, I'm concerned about the failure of Supervisor Wormhout, unless you've heard new updated information that I don't have, to support the Sonoma guidelines, which I'd like you to talk about, but also perhaps what I should do is just simply finish reading this story, and you can hear the end of it, and then we can kind of proceed to the interview?
Oh, most certainly.
Okay. Using marijuana for medical use is legal in seven states, including California, but remains illegal under superseding federal law. San Francisco District Attorney Terrence Hallinan has rebuked the federal government for trying to enforce the laws and does not prosecute medical marijuana cases. But in May, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the case of the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative that federal anti-drug laws do not permit an exception for medicinal marijuana. Richard Mayer, spokesman for the DEA, said the three men made their first appearance in court Tuesday and remain in custody. A hearing to set bail could come as early as today. This is in the Wednesday paper, so they possibly could have made bail today, but I haven't read about it.
Oh, yes, this is the bust of the 6th Street Harm Reduction Center up in San Francisco.
I believe so. Mayer discounted the allegations made by several pot advocates that the raids were staged to bring attention to the federal government's anti-drug stance. It was a coincidence, he said. We wouldn't put the lives of our agents at risk just to impress an administrator. In all, warrants were served in Oakland, San Francisco, and Petaluma. They were locations connected in one way or another to our investigation into a group that was smuggling and trafficking marijuana, Mayer said. Agents also searched five vehicles. The suspicion is that the men were supplying the club. Nonetheless, the club, the 6th Street Harm Reduction Center, seemed undaunted. Its workers went out and got some new product and reopened shortly after the raid. Go, 6th Street Harm Reduction Center.
Yes.
David Witte, chief of security for the Pot Club, said about a dozen agents broke into the unopened store Tuesday morning, taking computers, paperwork, a pound of marijuana, and 630 plants. They confiscated a truckload of stuff, Witte said. When they left, I opened the place for business. The store, on a seedy street just south of Union Square, has been operating for nearly a year and serves about 200 customers a day, Witte said. It not only offers pot to the sick who have a doctor's recommendation, but also provides meals and help in finding shelter. It was the club's first raid. At the counter sat Callie Middlebrook, smoking a marijuana joint and listening to the music pumping from the speakers. She said her doctor recommended she smoke pot to help her scoliosis. I'm still in chronic pain, said Middlebrooks, 44, but I can move easier and get more done than when I don't have any. And this is a story in yesterday's Mercury News by Dan Reed. San Francisco Medicinal Marijuana Club raided, plants seized, three held. Advocates cry foul, claim move coincided with officials' visit.
So who are the terrorists in this case?
Well, if you ask me, I would have to say it
the
is...
The DEA.
Yes, the DEA and the administration that is, in fact, instructing or tolerating this kind of attacks on people's medications and on institutions that are trying to help provide that medication. And you're one of those institutions, are you not?
Well, we are. We're friendly to marijuana, medical marijuana users. We do not distribute cannabis at the Compassion Flower Inn, but we do have patients and marijuana, medical marijuana users that do come to the inn, stay here, and have a safe haven for use of their medicine.
Mm-hmm. How long has the Compassion Flower Inn been open?
We've been open just about 2 years, on April 20th, 420.
Mm-hmm. Wow, coming up.
We're going to have a big celebration where my partner is... who's an artist, is making a wonderful hemp leaf mosaic out in the back of our inn.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to circle around that and give a good positive message and hope that and send prayers that the hemp food products will not become banned.
Where's the inn located?
We're located at 216 Laurel Street between Pacific Avenue and Cedar. It's right downtown.
And this is not an inn for indigent people, right? I mean, you got to have some bucks to stay overnight, right?
Oh, yes. It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. But we do offer discounts for people who have medical marijuana recommendations. Mm-hmm. And we have also weekday reductions in the rentals of the rooms.
How many many people actually do you, how many rooms you got?
We only have four lovely guest rooms, and they're all upstairs, and they're quite lovely.
And what would it cost me if I were to want to spend an evening there or spend a morning?
Let's see, you're a homeless advocate, aren't you?
You got it.
Well, we'll talk about that after the show. But our rates usually run from about $115 to $175.
I think that leaves me out for a while, but we'll see. But I think the point to me is not whether I want to, you know, I'm not criticizing you for the, you know, the more upscale, we might even say yuppie bed and breakfast quality. But more important, I'm concerned about the fact that you may be targeted along with other groups for simply facilitating the use of medical marijuana in Santa Cruz.
Well, I'm certainly a fear for the direction which the drug war has turned, and it has been more now directed at medical marijuana patients, people who are sick and dying, who are, you know, need the police to be in their face less than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be able to take their medicine and feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And this, what's happening up in San Francisco and earlier last year occurred down in West Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
Is a frightening direction. And I think it's the federal government that is you know, supplying the fuel here. Certainly the state, I think, would like to implement the Compassionate Use Act, Proposition 215.
Mm-hmm.
But the feds are really here, and they don't seem to want to relent. And I just worry that these dispensaries and clubs up in San Francisco, Oakland, and Berkeley are going to be all closed, and then what are the patients going to do?
Right.
If you mentioned in your article there that you read that 200 patients obtain medical marijuana every day up in San Francisco at this one dispensary,
mm-hmm.
and I know for a fact that there are like at least a half a dozen dispensaries there,
mm-hmm.
what are those patients going to do if all of those clubs and dispensaries are closed down?
You know, I've been talking for some time on the air, in fact been quite critical of Valerie Corral and Wham, although in another sense I'm not critical. I'm glad that somebody's providing something for someone, but I know that her group of 200 or so can in no way meet the need of medical marijuana people in Santa Cruz, and that she and other activists failed to get together to demand of then-Mayor Sugar and others on the city council that they declare a medical emergency, such as was the case in Oakland,
yes.
that would have allowed this Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals to continue. And there's some who are saying, well, these, you know, Cannabis Pharmaceuticals is charging money, whereas Wham doesn't charge money. You just have to engage in work or something, or, you know. But, I mean, I think the issue here is serving people who need medical marijuana, and that wasn't done, and instead we had some, you know, dispensations for a special group, a small group of Wham people, and I think we see now the fallout from this, which is now that we have an attack by the federal government, you know, there's not a united front. I'd like to see that united front begin to come together again, which is one of the reasons I've invited you to come on the air, and I've also invited Scott Immler, who was a part of a medical marijuana club about 6 or 7 years ago here, and of course was a part of that West Hollywood club that you mentioned was closed down,
yes.
or raided at least by the authorities, I guess, some months ago.
That's right. Well, we feel as though that the work that Wham is doing has been very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
They really have the very seriously ill people, and they're limited, really, to their membership because they only grow a certain number of plants, and they can accommodate, like you said, approximately 200 patients. However, our estimates are that there's probably at least 2,000 patients in Santa Cruz.
Right.
And on a regular basis, I have people that come to the inn, drop in, they call me, they send me emails, and ask, where can they obtain medical marijuana?
Down on the levee, man, in the beach flats, hey, baby.
I have to say that mm-hmm. there is just no place that you can obtain really, good pharmaceutical-grade cannabis in this city or the county,
mm-hmm.
and without filling out an application for Wham, and I know people that have been on the Wham's waiting list for over a year,
mm-hmm.
Without going to San Francisco, Oakland, and Berkeley, you are, just like you said, you have to go out on the street and deal with the black market, and or there's another alternative, and that is grow it yourself.
Now, that's an issue that came up up in Sonoma County. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Sonoma passed an ordinance, which there were guidelines for the sheriff and the police enforcement up there, which permit 3 pounds of possession of marijuana with a maximum 100 square foot cultivation area and no more than 99 plants. That seems to be working very, very effectively up there. One question that I get a lot is that I want to grow it myself. I don't want to be a member of WAM, or I don't want to have to go up to San Francisco or some other place to buy cannabis. I want to grow it myself, and I want to know how many plants or how much I can possess and grow. And this is what we are particularly concerned about now, Robert,
mm-hmm.
is that the sheriff in Santa Cruz have some kind of guidelines from which to base whether or not it's too much or too little. And
what kind of guidelines do they have now?
There are none. There are none. In fact, the sheriff just 2 weeks ago went before the Board of Supervisors because a few of us activists in the community had gone to the board and asked the board to ask the sheriff to consider guidelines for the county of Santa Cruz. Over 12 counties in California have guidelines. Santa Cruz has none whatsoever. And the sheriff came back and said, look, I'm handling this on a very fair basis. I'm taking it on a case-by-case basis, and I'm making decisions about medical cannabis, like this, and he's making basically doctor's decisions, of how much cannabis a patient can have, because sometimes they'll rip out a garden for 10 plants, and sometimes they'll allow 20 plants to exist. So they're making these judgment calls, and in a very kind of unfair way.
Even here in our wonderful Santa Cruz County with the very enlightened Sheriff Mark Tracy.
I do believe so, because even though the arrest and prosecution record of the sheriff is very good, I think that they do go in and they tear out the plants of people who say that they're patients and show doctor's recommendations. I think they're still tearing out the plants and not pressing charges. So there's no arrest.
No accountability?
There's no accountability there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of like the job that the protection mob, did. It was, they go in there and they rough people up and they tear their plants out and everything like this. And then people are too intimidated and too afraid to make a complaint because they're just too happy the charges haven't been filed.
You're not calling our sheriff's deputies brown shirts, are you?
No, I'm really not. I'm not, because I think that some of them,
even though their shirts are brown,
I think generally speaking, the sheriff's deputies are doing a pretty good job. But I think that there are individuals in the sheriff's department who do not see medical marijuana as a medicine. One of them is Sergeant Jim Hart.
I think I read about him.
There was an article in the newspaper on Monday.
Sentinel, I believe, yeah.
In the Sentinel. Mm-hmm. And in 1999, Sheriff Jim Hart went to a home of a MS patient who was rather advanced in his illness, and asked for the doctor's recommendation. When the patient showed the doctor's recommendation, he said, this guy's a quack, and proceeded to tear out 10 plants. All of his plants in the back of his garden, which were near maturity. And
that was Dr. Eugene Schoenfeld, as I remember.
And it was Dr. Hip, actually, yes.
Dr. Hip from the Berkeley Barb days.
Had written, yes, exactly right. Mm-hmm. And he's written a number of books. He's a very, very esteemed medical doctor. He's a psychiatrist. He's very well. To call this man a quack borders on real,
Well, perhaps he doesn't like Schoenfeld's politics.
Well, I think that's the way he feels. And he mm-hmm. also, this particular law enforcement officer, doesn't believe that medical marijuana has value.
He was quoted in the paper as saying he felt it was valueless. Are we talking about Sergeant Hart?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did say that. And now the county of Santa Cruz has a lawsuit against them for $75,000, which was filed by this patient, and it's still in court. Ben Rice is the attorney on this case, and this is going to be heard in the next probably weeks, the coming weeks. So there are deputies that are not willing to abide by the law, and to have a guideline, I think, is critical, because that will tell the sheriff exactly what procedures that they must use in order to determine whether it is a medical grow and how much the person is growing.
And the guideline up in Sonoma County is 99 plants or 3 pounds?
Well, no more than 99 plants, but no more than 3 pounds, mm-hmm. but 99 plants maximum. So
right.
It's not based on the number of plants, as they have oftentimes said in the past, because
right.
you could have 99 little clones, small plants,
mm-hmm.
But it's up to 3 pounds, maximum of 3 pounds in any one year.
Well, I know that in front of the Compassion Flower Inn is this huge billboard that says Wormhout for Supervisor, and yet Marty now says that she doesn't favor this proposal and she backs up Dear Sheriff Mark Tracy. Now, are you going to have to go out there and do some painting on the sign, or what?
Well, they put that sign up last week, and if I had seen the article in the newspaper where Marty came out opposed to guidelines for the sheriff, I may have thought twice about it, allowing her to put the sign there. But Marty has been a very strong supporter of the anti-camp grant.
That's the helicopters.
Camp
over
helicopter, yeah, the camp grant, which is approximately $225,000 to $250,000 every year, and she's the only one on the board that votes, against it.
Has she voted against any other aspect of the drug war that this county and the state and the city have been pursuing with such a vigor?
I'm not aware that there are any other things that the Board of Supervisors votes for, other than
For example, they could vote to make medical marijuana prosecution the lowest priority. They could, they could vote to have a DEA free zone. We have an INS free zone. I mean, why not a DEA free zone?
Yeah.
I mean, they could do for harm reduction inhalation rooms,
make Santa Cruz County a sanctuary for medical cannabis use.
Correct.
Like San Francisco, and I would like to see a resolution. Doing that.
I mean, I admit to a bias against Wormhout. I regard her as a major hypocrite and power tripper for the last decade around homeless issues, letting homeless people hang out and hang out in the cold, doing nothing to assist in decriminalizing them, and in essence also shutting up other people who want to raise the issue. And I'm not just talking about, kind of wild cards like myself, but, established politicians. And I think that, I would like to see, any politician take a better position, but frankly, if an incumbent who has a lot of power, Wormhout has a lot of power because she's been an incumbent for so long, and she's part of this sort of inner circle of progressive politicos in Santa Cruz, isn't taking the kinds of stances she needs to take on the drug war, I think we have to dump her ass out and get somebody in there who will. And I'm not saying there's any perfect candidate to do that, but have we been looking around? Have you been contacting Mark Premack and Mike Schmidt, who are running against her, for instance?
I did talk with Mike Schmidt the other day. He actually, I think you put me in touch with him.
True enough.
He, on the surface of it, would be in favor of guidelines for the sheriff with respect to medical marijuana grows. I'm not sure whether or not any of these candidates really would like to be where we are when it comes to medical marijuana, when it comes to making cannabis arrests low priority. I think they're all politicians, and they're all kind of playing to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that partly Wormhout in this case is now because she's up for a re-election, she's kind of playing to the middle. For her to come out at this point to say that she supports guidelines, I think that she might lose some votes there. I think that Premack, and what I've seen of him on the city council, He is no better than Wormhout. I don't know if we could find a politician out there that really is going to do and have the kind of agenda that we would like to see.
Well, I was at the UCSC forum. There's a series of voter forums this next week or two before the March 5th supervisorial elections, and I was listening to these candidates do their thing, and I wasn't, you know, terribly impressed, frankly, although I've mentioned before I like Schmidt's positions on homeless issues, and I liked what I heard him say to you, I guess, night before last, or whenever it was, I guess it was the night before last, regarding his support of the Sonoma thing. I would like to know if you hear from Wormhout or Premack, pro, con, or whatever it is, waffle, wobble, whatever, so we can get some sense, because, candidates can always lie and change their positions. I've noticed that Schmidt has held pretty strong on his position, for example, opposing the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance even before hostile audiences, and I regard that as something that impresses me. When the guy keeps saying the same thing before different audiences, even though I disagree with his position on other things, I have to give him credit for integrity. And I'm wondering what. Have you contacted Wormhout yet and found out what her position is on this?
I've been meaning to go over there and talk to her at one of her Monday meetings at Java Junction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do that probably. I've been a little bit busy this week because this is Valentine's week, and we've been extremely busy at the inn.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a lot of people for this week already and for the weekend, so we're kind of gearing up for that. I'm going to go over there and talk with her about this because this comes as a surprise to me also, because I thought Wormhout was a staunch supporter of medical marijuana guidelines for the sheriff.
I know that I sent her an email two nights ago, not on this issue, but on the issue of homeless civil rights, because she was going to be speaking up at UCSC at the election forum, and she responded within 12 hours to my email. Her response was wholly unsatisfactory, but she at least responded. She said, all my positions are in my platform, and you can read them there, and of course they weren't. She had no positions about dealing with the decriminalization of homeless people at night, and the fact that she's refusing to open up County and Emmeline Street parking lots for, you know, or even consider opening them up for people in vehicles who have no legal place to go. So, I mean, I didn't get any, but I got at least a response by email. So you might find the same thing if you email her. And, hey, I encourage you to do that and let us know. We do another show on Sunday. If, you know, she has come out for these guidelines, in which case I can't trash her on this issue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, if she hasn't, I will encourage people on the basis of homeless issues and this medical marijuana issue alone not to vote to continue her, you know, her tenure. We're talking with Andrea Tischler, who's the Compassion Flower Inn, what would you call yourself, overseer? The
I changed the bed. Changed the sheets.
Oh, you're the bed. The bed sheet changer. You're the maid at the Compassion.
The maid.
No, that's cool.
There's a lot of work to a bed and breakfast. Actually, I own the inn, and we. Our family operates it. I'm my partner, and I have two children.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have no hired staff. We just run the inn ourselves, and we're very much dedicated to the medical marijuana cause because we've been involved with the movement for a long time.
Any suggestions as to what the community should do? I mean, I'm looking for some kind of alert, if a process by which we can show up if there's an attack on one of these clubs, and not so much as throw ourselves in the way of the DEA with their guns and squat teams or SWAT teams or what they've got, but, you know, I don't know, just be present to make, you know, observe the kind of turmoil that they're creating, and to show our disapproval
mm-hmm.
of what's going on.
I would like to see some demonstrations, particularly if there are more of the dispensaries and clubs up in San Francisco and the Bay Area that are closed down, because this is going to create a health crisis in the Bay Area. And there already is a health crisis here in Santa Cruz, but at least some of the patients do get up to San Francisco and Oakland to buy their medicine. Others, because we do have so much space here, grow their own cannabis, and that's really good. But we need to definitely let the Our federal government know that we will not stand by and allow this kind of trampling of our rights, rights which are established in our state law in the form of the Compassionate Use Act.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think we also got to let our local representatives know that they need to provide a real structure that does meets the need of patients and isn't simply a kowtowing to the bigoted views on the police force or the sheriff's forces. You know?
Definitely. And so, Robert, I would like to encourage the people that are listening, if they're interested in becoming involved with this, we always need to, more people. There's just a handful of us right now. Remember, we used to turn out 300 people at the Board of Supervisors meetings to mm-hmm. oppose the Camp Grant just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our people have just burnt out, and others have passed away, and others have left the community. And so we're always needing new people to become involved in this very serious fight. And
who
I
should
think
people call?
Well, they could call me.
Okay.
You can reach me at 466-0420. I mean, we're right here on the front lines.
466-0420 to reach Andrea Tischler.
Yeah, and I'll answer Compassion Flower Inn or leave a message. And or you can reach me on the email, reservations. You don't have to make a reservation, but it's reservations, plural. Reservations at CompassionFlowerInn.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to maybe stage a little demonstration or rally down there in front of the county building, possibly, at some future time. And or maybe go as a group up to San Francisco and support the clubs up there, the patients that are